The speaker of the evening will be introduced by Provost Griffith.
Mr. Cleary, friends of the university, when I first read the title of this talk tonight, "Is the South That Bad?" I was thrown into a bad state of conflict. The left side of my brain said, "No, it isn't that bad." And this might be true because the left side of my brain was trained by my grandfather on my mother's side, who charged across the wheat fields toward Seminary Ridge on a certain July 2nd and 3rd, or 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, or whatever it may have been. And the right side of my brain said, "Yes." And I presume because this side of my brain was trained by my grandfather on my father's side, who stood on Seminary Ridge, attempting to repulse this charge across the wheat fields. And as a strange bit of history, it seems to have occurred that these two grandfathers must have come within 30 or 40 feet of each other on one of these days, I think the third day. And now, after all of these years, having quite forgotten about this early conflict until this dramatic title stirred it all up again, I am happy to be present on an occasion when a very distinguished citizen can give us what might be a real answer to this question. Mr. Carter is one of these persons who, after a long period of training in a variety of different activities, during which he has achieved a Pulitzer Prize, decided to make his voice known through the avenue of a small newspaper. And yet the voice that sounded out of this newspaper has become known not only in the local community, but throughout the state of Mississippi and throughout the nation. And it is, then, a real privilege to come to know Mr. Carter and to be able to present him to you tonight. And he does intend to speak to you on the topic, "Is the South That Bad?" Mr. Carter.
Dr. Griffith, students, and friends, I was interested in that story about Missionary Ridge, if it was Missionary Ridge, because I've been wondering who it was killed my great-grandfather. I think he got caught between the crossfire of the two grandfathers mentioned. This is a pretty historic night for me. Some 8 months ago, a fellow newspaper man from Pittsburgh came south disguised as a Negro. He stayed there 4 weeks and went back and wrote a series of articles that told all. He was an expert after 4 weeks. Well, I've just finished a little over 3 weeks disguised as a lecturer in the Middle West, and I'm debating tonight whether to stick out for the rest of this week so that I can have 4 weeks and can go back home and write a book about the Middle East. I think I could do a better job at that than I can at talking. But actually, it's been a very fine experience for me, leaving Mississippi on a more or less professional junket and going elsewhere. And in most ways, I'm sorry that it's over tonight, at least over for the time being. Not because I'm a professional lecturer. This is my first real try at it. And I think there are too many professional lecturers anyhow. And not because I'm a professional Southerner. I think there are too many of those too. Neither one of those reasons prompted me to take this trip, which I'm just ending. It's actually and sincerely simply because, not as a Southerner, but as an American, I have been disturbed in recent years, particularly in the last 2 years, by the results of what seems to me a lack of complete understanding of my part of the country by much of the rest of the country. It's very real, this lack of full understanding. I believe it's easy enough to explain, and certainly to condone in part. As a newspaper publisher, a newspaper man, I know that the press too often emphasizes the sensational and the violent in its news reports, particularly when the sensational and the violent occur far enough away from home to take attention away from what might be happening closer by. Also, having watched a number of politicians firsthand in Mississippi and Louisiana, which are two very good places to watch them, I know that politicians in every section, not only in the South, do emphasize those issues most calculated to win votes for themselves, and certainly a sectional issue in which the accusing finger can be pointed at another section has been as profitable to a number of politicians in the North as it has been to our Bilbos when they were still unfortunately alive, and our Rankins and others down there. And lastly, of course, the activities of pressure groups themselves who seek to accent the more sordid, the sensational, in the same attempt to create, as they should create, sympathy and aid for their own interests. But looking at these things for a long time, these things we call controversies, whatever the controversy, I found out one fact that I think we might all start with is that in any section, in any controversy, on either side of a political line, a racial line, or the Mason-Dixon line, there are those people whom a president of the United States can describe more accurately than I can up here tonight. And so I want to talk to you about this other side of the South, the hidden South behind the headlines, behind the speeches of our politicians and yours. The South that I don't believe is as bad as all that, either with the left side of my brain or the right side of my brain. First, we talk glibly about the South as if it were one single and singular unit. So it is in an attack and in defense. But what do we mean about it? Do we mean the South of Alabama, for instance, which refused to put the Democratic Party's presidential candidate on its ballot? Or the South of 8 states, which despite the high emotional turmoil over the civil rights issue, was not led away from those by those issues and did remain Democratic? Do you mean the South of John Rankin, of Earl Long and Herman Talmadge, or the South of Lister Hill, of William Fulbright, Estes Kefauver? a South where, in some areas, anti-labor groups still beat up organizers, or a South where the CIO and the AFL do count some 800,000 members and are now conducting new drives? Is it a South of the poverty of eroded areas that made a play in New York, the eroded areas of Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia, or the rich promise of the recovered land of the TVA country, or the wealth of Texas and Louisiana still barely touched, the stability of Virginia and North Carolina? Do you mean the South where one lynching mob went unpunished last year for the one lynching of a Negro that did occur, or the South where the 100 lynchings of my boyhood have been reduced to that one and can, I know, be wiped out? The South where one Negro was murdered last fall for exercising his right to vote, or the South where 700,000 Negroes did vote without molestation, as they should have? Or do you mean the South of the cotton economy, the ruinous cotton economy that still persists somewhat in my own area, or the smokestacks of Birmingham, the port of New Orleans, and the dynamism of Houston? The South of the highest illiteracy rate in the nation, or the South that is spending a greater proportion of its tax dollar than any other area, and in time and with federal aid to education, will bridge that gap that exists now because of relative poverty? And finally, a South of anger and fear at an old specter, or a South of confidence in the working out of human relations? The answer is, I know that, and many of our critics may not know it, that we're all of these things, a place of tragic contradictions and yet of glowing hope. But to the outsider, casual or otherwise, we remain a single unit, identified in terms of our lowest common denominators, and denominators that often aren't even common: the land of the demagogue, the lyncher, the place where juries will not convict lynchers, the land of the sharecropper and a ruinous agricultural system, of political sterility and social fears, in a land where too many from beyond point saying see, and few ask why or whither. We who live down there, many of us have also seen for ourselves, but some of us have also asked why, and we have found some encouragement in the question whither. And we realize that over and above the derogatory identifications, there is an area which, for a number of reasons, can be described as a unit, the South. And of that area, two charges are most frequently made, and with considerable justification. One is that we are intolerant, and that because of our intolerance, we discriminate against the minority group which dwells among us. I don't want what I say now to sound defensive, but intolerance, I don't have to tell you, is not a Southern vice alone. As a newspaper man, I've been in Harlem and on Chicago's South Side. I know the position and the attitudes regarding the Jews of our country in many areas in this country. I know that anti-Catholicism exists in large areas, and in some areas, anti-Protestantism. No one could ask a Mexican-American or an Oriental-American if he thought that intolerance or discrimination were restricted to the South. It's not with any joy that anyone stands up, and I don't do it to say you too.